Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Before we get started, I'm excited to share that my book, Something Extra, launches on September 30th, and you can pre-order it today. It is rooted in the remarkable spirit of our daughter, Allie, and the heartfelt conversations we've had on the podcast. You'll find wisdom and practical tools to ignite the leader within you and uncover your own Something Extra. Visit somethingextrabook.com to order your copy today. Today, we're fortunate to be joined by Michael Steinberg. Michael is the founder and owner of the Steinberg Group. Well, Michael Steinberg, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I am so delighted that we can make this happen today.
Well, thank you. I'm excited about it, too. You know, always having something extra always makes it a better day.
I agree with that. Yes. And you've got lots of something extras, and we're going to really dig into a lot of those. But I'd love for you to take me back to growing up, because I know that you grew up in Omaha, Nebraska, same town as Warren Buffett. You'd asked me about the books behind me, and I said, no, they're real books. And I just remember, Michael, Uncle Warren, I think he spends 80% of his day reading.
It's interesting. You know, I knew Warren Buffett. I delivered his newspaper. I did grow up in Omaha, and I knew his nephew, Tom Rogers, well. I know his kids, but not as well as I knew Tom Rogers, who was his nephew. And I remember always going over or being by there, and Warren was never downstairs. He went up to the third floor. He lives in the same house, probably 60 years now, and was always reading. That's what he did. You know, he was always by himself. And you know, Susie Buffett, well, his wife, raised the kids. And, you know, that's just who Warren Buffett was. And one of the nicest people. And I remember, you know, at Christmas, he would give us, you know, we'd go over and he'd give you a dollar. And he'd always say, what are you going to do with that dollar? Well, I was a kind of a husky young man. And I said, well, Warren, I'm going to go, Mr. Buffett, I'm going to go up to the Chris's drugstore and buy as much candy as I can. And he always used to say, well, you should save your money. I said, I'll make plenty of money. I was hungry. I don't know, several years ago, I had the pleasure of being in an FBO and saw Warren Buffett. And he looked at me and said, well, Mr. Steinberg, you've exceeded what I thought. Congratulations.
Oh, that is so special.
Yeah, you know, it was really kind of nice. And he's a very nice guy. And, you know, he's done great. I did read a lot of his books, and a lot of my friends are his investors. And one of my best friends is an attorney that does work for him. And I remember him saying, stay in your lane. Just stay in your lane. You know, do what you're good at. And it's true. And I've always tried to do that. And, you know, so I've been fortunate to take advice from people. And, you know, growing up in Omaha was a great place. So a statistic that's interesting. When I grew up in Omaha, there was 250,000 people. Today, when I go back, there's a million. They all came from the farms. And, you know, Omaha has a lot of corporate citizens. It's a great city. It really is. I was just there celebrating the 100th anniversary of the JCC that I helped rebuild. And I drove around and, you know, it's just a great place. And it was fun to look at what Omaha has turned out to be. I got to tell you, the Midwest education of growing up, going to West Side High School And just people were nice. People took an interest in you. And I couldn't have had a better childhood.
Oh, my goodness. I love that. I feel the same way. I grew up in Paducah, Kentucky, and I was just there this weekend for my husband's 45th high school reunion, Michael. And the people, it's just salt of the earth. And right. People want to help, and they know their neighbors, and they are doing life with each other. I mean, I could not agree more. I'm so grateful for the childhood that I had and the values.
Oh, absolutely. It's values. But, you know, you don't know this. But the second Walmart built in Paducah, I built.
Is that right?
Yeah, it was the first Supercenter built in Paducah. So I have been to Paducah. It's, about 2 hours from here? Is that about right?
It's more like three and a half, depending on how often you stop.
Well, it depends on where you leave from. And I used to make that drive all the time. I think I built that Walmart in 1993, 94. I remember driving down there a lot.
Well, it's very busy. I know people that work at that Walmart.
Okay,
so thank you. I mean, I've already said this offline to you, Michael, but thank you so much. I mean, wherever you plant yourself, you bloom and you make the community better. And I know for us in the St. Louis region, you've done so much, and so much in Denver. Wherever you land, Michael, you make the community better. And I got so much I want to talk about.
Oh,
there.
Go ahead. You're in charge. I'm just answering the questions.
Well, thank you. I was going to ask you about that question that Uncle Warren said, go invest it, and you went and bought candy, but I think you did okay. Let me ask you this. I know that your mom and dad were huge influences in your life. Huge influences, Michael. Can you tell our listeners the story about the red athletic jacket?
The red coat.
Tell the story.
Well, I'd be happy to. And, actually tomorrow will be the 58th anniversary of my dad's passing when I was 13. He passed away when we were watching Walt Disney at 6:15. He had a heart attack and just didn't move out of the chair, which, you know, was a major impact. But my dad was really impactful to my life. So growing up in Omaha, there was no professional sports teams, but we had a professional sports team, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. You know, as everybody, you know, I always kid, the N stands for knowledge. Okay. So when I grew up in 1962, I think Bob Devaney became the coach and the Huskers took off. They were like ranked every year. They were like Bill Belichick and the Patriots. So, okay. So you got to think about this. So I'm a kid, 10 years old, and all I wanted to do was have a red coat, you know, to celebrate. You know, go big red. You know, of course, I'm not going to go to the games. How am I going to go to the games? You know, they're on Saturday. We have no money, you know. So I wanted this red coat. And so I told my dad I wanted a red coat. And my dad says, okay. And I'm going to use a number for $10. It's easier to divide and add.
Sure.
And the coat was $10. This is back in 1964. So probably the coat was $2 or whatever. But I said to my dad, I'd like a coat. And he says, you know what? He had a sixplex. And if you come to my office, there's a picture of it with him in front. And I said, okay. He said, I'll pay you 20. I remember this, 25 cents an hour. So I worked and got, you know, 40 hours. And I had that, you know, had $10. And I'm ready to get this coat. And, you know, being Jewish and Shabbos and Friday night, you don't do business on Saturday. So my dad comes home. And he says, you ready to settle up? And we called him, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We'd like to settle up. And so he takes five $1 bills and puts it in a pile, three $1 bills and puts it in a pile, and two in a pile. And I'm looking at him, and he says, what pile would you like? I said, sir, you pick. He said, well, the $5 are yours. Now, here I am, this little 10-year-old kind of husky kid. I'm like, this isn't going to go well. I mean, here I am. I know what this coat's going to cost, and I need this coat because I was planning on going to buy it on Monday, you know, and, you know, you couldn't, you know, Sunday, you know, with the blue laws back then.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, the $3, thank you for being such a great partner. And I looked at him, and he says, yeah, the roof over your head, the food on the table, I'll drive you. You're a great partner, so thank you. And he says, what do you think the Torah teaches you about giving? I said, well, 10%. He says, we're not a 10% family. We're a 20% family. Now, we have no money, but, you know, he instilled this in my life that we needed to do better than what expectations were. So, of course, I got up crying, ran upstairs where these bunk beds. I slipped underneath the bunk beds. You couldn't pick these bunk beds up. They must have weighed 5,000 pounds.
So they were well built.
Oh, my God, of wood. And I missed dinner. And he says, well, so what are we doing now? He says, you got a choice. You can stay here and I'll be very upset, or take the $2 that you earned and give it to the rabbi for the tzedakah box, and I'll see you in 5 minutes. Well, I was smart enough to figure out that maybe I should get up. So this was repeated again a month later, and I did get the red coat, but he did teach me the value of recognizing and respecting, you know, what we're here for. You know, mm-hmm. We're partners. You know, it wasn't just a free ride because I was his kid, and the fact that you need to give to charity. And they're always, you know, back then they'd always talk about the people in Africa. That I remember that. You have to finish your plate. Kids in Africa don't have any food. And, you know, they were very subtle. My mom also embraced things like that in a different way. She always would never tell you anything. She would make a suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
She would kind of say, it's up to you, but this is what I suggest. Well, it's a different way of thinking about things. And if you come to my office, on one of my walls, I have probably 3,000 pieces of art here. I have a red jacket that is the copy. It's not the original one, but it's exactly what I work for. I found it through, you know, how you go online and you look through, mm-hmm. you know, before. So I got that coat, and it was an impact. And as I said, you know, unfortunately, my dad passed away when I was 13, but he was a great role model.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the reason I work as hard as I do, because I remember watching him.
Right.
You know, and everybody loved this guy. Now, I can't say everybody loves me, but that's okay. It's all right, you know, but he was such a, you know, even today, all his friends are, there's still five or six of them left in their 90s. And it's crazy. And it's just interesting when you talk about him, they just said, your dad was a wonderful person. Smart, smart, smart. You know, I'm not the smart. My siblings are a lot smarter. He met my mom at University of Texas. He was a full professor at 18 or 19 or 20, and she was a student in economics. And, of course, I had to follow the steps and majored in economics. So,
yes.
That's the red story. You know, it's a story that I'm proud to tell. And I think about it. I have, when you walk in my office, I had James Michael Smith, an artist, make a red coat. And it's behind my desk. So when I walk in, I see the red coat. Across the way, there's an African mask, because I remember the African, you know, the kids.
The kids.
My mom had 6 masks when she passed away, so I figured I'd add to the collection.
Oh, I just love that story so much. And I love that you have those replicas now, Michael, because I think about sometimes, I mean, you know, if you think about the Torah or the Bible, you know, God would say, like, set up these stones or set up this altar kind of as an Ebenezer,
right?
Of
right.
remembrance, because I think he knew we're very forgetful people.
we're forgetful, but hopefully people remember things. And
yes,
it's not always about money. It really isn't.
No, it's not.
You know, I always tell everybody, everybody mm-hmm. has 24 hours in a day. Figure out mm-hmm. what you're going to do with it. Everybody, nobody gets more. Nobody gets any yeah. less. And yes. everybody has a talent to do something.
So I agree. Everybody has a something extra, Michael.
That's
everybody
right. That's
was going, something, you know? Something extra. So, right. And I want to talk about that, because I want to talk about the pond. I want to talk okay. about when you're inducted. But I got a couple more questions for you
sure.
here.
Go ahead.
So when your dad passed away, you went to work bagging groceries, whatever you could do to help your mom out. Right.
I did. It was tough. I mean, there was nobody there, but, you know, thankfully there was a gentleman named Jerry Freeman. Melvin was his name. I don't know how he got to Jerry, but, you know, my friend Bob Freeman's dad, and he was really nice, and he gave me a lot of lessons. He made sure I was included. It was hard, you mm-hmm. know, it was really hard, you know, and all my friends had money, and I had no money. all I remember was, you know, wanting never to have to cut grass or shovel snow. That was my goal, you know, to have enough money not to do that. And then I worked as a brick tender one summer. It was a tornado that went through Omaha. I realized I did not want to be a brick tender the rest of my life. So I figured education might be a better way of doing it.
That's a better way of doing it. Well, yes. And you were a brick tender to put yourself through school, right?
Right. And I, you know, I'll never forget that summer. I mean, I had like $5,000 or $6,000 of cash. They paid me the, you know, 40 hours. And do you want to work overtime? I said, sure. They paid me double to work overtime and they paid in cash. And I remember my mom saying, where'd you get all this cash? And why don't you put it in the bank? I said, no, then I'd have to, you know, don't call the IRS, but I probably would have had to pay a little taxes on it and put it underneath the bed and, you know,
the mattress.
Yeah, really, I did. And I took cash with me down to school.
Yeah. Well, I know my husband, Greg, he talks about when he was 11 years old, he started washing cars and just anything he could do, mowing lawns, doing whatever he could do, you know, to earn money. But, you know, I know you went to Arizona State University and you studied finance and economics. You know, your dad, wasn't your dad in some commercial real estate?
He was not commercial so much. It's he was building the first garden level apartments.
Okay.
And unfortunately, he passed away and we lost those because of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the first one to come up with garden level apartments in the Midwest. He was from Newark and he studied things and he had this idea. They were called Pacific Gardens. And the reason it was called Pacific Gardens was because it was on Pacific Street. And he thought it would be a garden. And they're still there today and they're still rented. And he built a, in front of the apartments, not mixed use, but in front he built some retail. And nobody had done that before. And, you know, the bar that when I was 16, they'd let me into called the Interlude, still there. And Joe's Barbershop is a different barbershop now. It's still there. And my dad got the franchise for Baskin-Robbins back in 1964, 65. I mean, nobody had Baskin-Robbins. And I remember getting a gallon of ice cream every month, one flavor. And I always used to say, well, there's 31 flavors. What's the problem here? You know, I mean, so that was.
You had some real estate in your blood then.
Yeah,
isn't that amazing though, Michael? Because I think about that and I think about, and we'll talk about downtown Chesterfield, but I think, you know, you have a vision of doing that. I mean, we had an office in Dallas for a while and they had Vitruvian, and it was apartments on top, retail on bottom, kind of like a all-inclusive living space. It was really just a really amazing concept for your dad to have that thought.
1964. That's what is that? How many years is that? 60 years ago.
60 years ago.
Yeah, it was really ahead of his time. And, you know, as I said, he was very, very smart.
Mm-hmm.
He was a professor at like 18, 19, 20 at University of Texas. And, you know, I mean, and my siblings are really smart. Doesn't mean they're successful. I don't mean that in a bad way. But, you know, my dad was able to take his abilities and make, you know, something out of it. And his brothers were really smart. My dad's, my uncles, but they weren't that successful. You know, you got to somehow have that gene of drive and wanting to succeed and willing to fail. You have to be willing to fail to succeed.
Mm-hmm. That's good wisdom right there. Right. Yeah. And I mean, you've never seen a successful person that did not fail somewhere. Michael.
Exactly. I mean, you know, it's like I failed when I didn't get that red coat. I did fail. I thought I had that red coat and, you know, I wanted to make sure I got that red coat. So, yeah, what it is.
Yeah. So you learned so much from your dad, obviously. So after college, I mean, you had offers from companies like Gulf Oil, May Company, but you chose real estate. And it's probably because you grew up seeing your dad do some of these things, right? But I want to hear this story. The first year in real estate.
It was a tough year. It was.
How much money did you make the first year in real estate, Michael?
$290, and I was waiting tables because I had no money, and it was tough. It was really hard. And my friend John Rubenstein invited me to stay with his parents, and so I didn't have any rent and board. And you know, it was just hard because, you know, I wasn't very mature. You know, we all mature at a different time. You know, I watch my grandkids, they all walk at a different time. They all talk at a different time.
And, sure.
And I just couldn't shut up. And there was a guy named Gray Turner that came in my office one day and said, look, I think you're probably the smartest kid I've met. You're hard work, but just shut up. Just shut up. Go to a meeting and don't say anything. And he also said to me, if you don't know the answer, just say, I don't know. Now, you watch a lot of people. They maneuver around that. They kind of say, well, yeah, maybe this. Well, forget Google. We didn't have any Google back then. Mm-hmm. Everybody would make stuff up. And he just says, just say, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a hard lesson for me because, you know, I did pretty well in college. You know, I think I got two C's, English 101 and English 102, but the rest of A's. And I hate to write, but I like to read, but I hate to write. And I can give a speech, but I just don't like to write.
You just don't like to write. But yeah. It's so true, though, Michael. I've got a friend, Jeff Henderson, that was a CMO for the Atlanta Braves. And then he worked for Chick-fil-A for a long time. And I'll never forget him saying, like, humility, you know, is one of, in his mind, one of the greatest traits of a good leader. And he said, get used, practice saying, I don't know.
Right. And, but you know, I have a different way of saying humility.
Okay. Let me hear it.
Check your ego at the door.
Yes.
You got to check your ego at the door. And you know, it's not about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about we, it's about us. And I always tell everybody that it's about us. There's no I in team except two and idiots. But if you're Kobe Bryant, he'll tell you, well, the E in team is about me. Well, it's not about me. You know, people, if you really believe that, then you're not going to be, you know, there's certain people that can pull that off, a Michael Jordan, a Barry Bonds, you know, people. But, you know, in today's world, you know, I watch, you know, the world change, and you got to be about us. It's how we, not we, but us, you know, have the team effort.
I could not agree. I know that I could do nothing right by myself, Michael. I know we talked about this in the beginning where Warren Buffett said, how did he say, stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane, right? I've got my lane. I know the things that God has gifted me, strengths.
Right, right.
But there's a lot of things I am not that good at. And you need to have the humility to say, hey, that's not my thing, and you know, I'm gonna empower you to do that because that's your thing, right? So,
right. The other thing I learned about that is what someone else told me. He says, you know, a man that can't change his mind. Well, not a man, a person. Let's back that up. A person that can't change their mind has no mind.
Mm.
So when people come in, I'm always willing to listen, but don't, you know, throw something out and not have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
That's really one of my biggest pet peeves is you come in and, well, that doesn't look good. Well, okay. What do you suggest that we do differently to make it look good?
That's good. Right. That's good. That's good wisdom there too. Well, let me ask you this. So let's kind of fast forward a little bit. 1991.
Sure.
Co-founded THF. Go there all the time. THF Realty, THF Boulevard. With Stan Kroenke.
Right.
What was the vision behind that partnership? And then I would love for you to tell our listeners, if they don't know, what does THF stand for and how did that play out in some of the projects?
That's THF stood for to have fun. So I was working for Leo Eisenberg, and unfortunately, you know, the organization was fizzling out for a variety of reasons, and, you know, it was sad. So I met Stan Kroenke in 1982-83 because of a contact called McDonald's, Little McDonald's. So I got their business in 1978. I met Sam Walton because of it. I had called the gentleman named H. Webb Leslie, just like Robin Williams. He looked like Robin Williams. He acted like Robin Williams. And I was in Kansas City, and I called him up, and he was in St. Louis, and he said, I said, you know, I'd like to do your deals. And I said, great. I'd love to do your deals too. And he says, so let me ask you one question. And this goes back to what I say: if you don't know something, you don't you tell the whole story. He says, "How many restaurant deals have you ever done?" I said, "None." And he says, "Well, come on down to St. Louis. Let's have lunch." So I went down, met him, and we're talking. Of course, we went to McDonald's. It was at 270 in Manchester in the Safety Federal Building at that point. And I told him I was from Omaha. And he says, "Well, I got an opportunity for you. Red Oak, Iowa, which is about an hour from Omaha." I went over there and found a site and became the exclusive broker for McDonald's, which was crazy. So I went down to Clinton, Missouri, and Stan and his partner at the time, Rawl, had a shopping center. And I tried to put a McDonald's on one of their pads. And unfortunately, he said to me, "Well, we're not interested in selling." And I said, "Well, McDonald's is only interested in buying." And I said, "There's, you know, four homes across the street." And he says, "Well, you'll never get those rezoned." I went down there, got them rezoned, took a picture, drove the picture, because I have the saying, you can't put a pencil through the phone, drove it to Columbia. And I said, "What's the next challenge, Stan?" So fast forward, it's 1988, 89, and, you know, Eisenberg's imploding. And, you know, I don't know what to do. So I called him up. And I said, you know, I drove down and I said, "You know, I'd love to be your partner. I'm, you know, looking for someone who can do some stuff with me." And he looked at me and said, "Well, you can come work for me." And I said, "No, thanks." So about 6 weeks later, he calls and says, "I'm going to be in St. Louis." And I'll never forget that I met him at Frontenac Hilton, had breakfast. And he says, "Okay, I'm going to try a deal with you." Great. And it was a deal with Wetterall in Katanning, Pennsylvania. And the good news was that I needed to come up with some money. And Stan says, "You know, I'll put it in." And, you know, we agreed on a partnership. And about a week later, Wetterall called and said, "Guess what? We'll put all the money up." So I called Stan. And I said, "You know," I went down there. And I said, "Stan, I got good news and better news. The good news is I don't need your money. But the better news is, I respect that you're there. Let's keep the partnership the same way." And that started a relationship for until 2012. And he had a change in how he thought about things. And, you know, things don't last forever. And as I tell people, if I saw him, I'd say, "Hey, Stan, thank you." I wouldn't be who I am. I learned a lot. I hope he learned a lot. And no hard feelings.
Mm-hmm.
No hard feelings. And, yeah. You know, people say, "Well, how do you feel?" I said, "You know, I don't think he treated St. Louis the best, moving the Rams, but that's his, you know, he owned the team."
Right.
I didn't have anything to do with the team.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, and so I don't think I would have done it that way. But, you know, I mean, that's just how I thought about it. So that's how I met Stan, and I was in business with him for 23, 24 years. And, you know, sometimes things don't end the way you want. But I have all the respect for him, and I only wish him well.
Yeah. And I know he's got the respect for you too. There's so much baked into what you just told me. The first thing that I think about, Michael, when you got that initial call, if you had not said yes to coming and meeting, you know, maybe that whole domino thing would not have happened. So you've got to protect your yes, but taking risk, right? No risk, no reward.
I've had this happen time and time again. And you know what? You know, sometimes it hasn't worked out. Most of the time it has. But as I said, I'm willing to fail to succeed. And, you know, if I hadn't met Webb Blessley, who knows where I'd be today?
Right.
You know, who? If I hadn't met Norman Lees, who knows where I'd be? Or Willie Thiessen, or the Pearl Vision people, or the Payless Shoe people. I mean, I was always out there hustling.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, everybody was, you know, I have the saying, I work every day that ends in Y. And so, yeah, I do. And, you know, I like it. I really do. And, you know,
right.
This isn't just, I'm there from 8:30 to 5:30 on Monday through Friday. Well, you never know what might happen. You know, yesterday I did something and, you know, my show be something I'm proud of in a little bit. So
absolutely. Take those meetings when they come your way, and you just never know. Well, we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Michael Steinberg on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Mr. Michael Steinberg. We've been having so much fun, so much fun. So, Michael, I know that you and Carol in 2012 formed the Steinberg Group. What is TSG's philosophy and what does it mean in practice?
You know, our philosophy is to be good partners. You know, live locally, give locally, be part of the community where you are. I always had that feeling. You know, it was important because, you know, it's nice to make money. I like making money. But I also think it's important something bigger than just making money, what you do with the money and how you can enhance the community you live in. And I could live anywhere in the United States. I choose to live in St. Louis. And, you know, it's a region in 25 years ago, somehow someone asked me to join the Regional Business Council, Kathy Osborne.
Yes.
And it changed my life again. You know, another opportunity to be part of the region.
Mm-hmm.
But, really, I like that. And that's what TSG is about. You know, it's great to have these shopping centers. And yes, I have 2 million square feet in, Chesterfield, and I built the factory. But how do we, you know, help people? You know, like a little unknown fact is that we give away $100,000 a year to nonprofits. I call them the orphan nonprofits from the factory. Every concert, we, you know, have people, we donate money, you know, so we can make a difference. Mm-hmm. I don't have to do that. I don't know any concert venue in America that does this.
Mm-hmm. And that's so the factory gives away $100,000 a year? I did not realize that.
Yeah,
and the factory, for those of you, because we have people all over the world that listen, Michael, for those of you who do not live in St. Louis, the factory is such a cool concert venue. Beautiful, beautiful in Chesterfield. I love that venue.
I do too. And, you know, I'm proud of it. But
yes.
Again, you know, as I said, I can't write, but I can certainly figure things out. And I, you know, I feel like I'm an artist. I can be the artist and the framer. I like being the artist. But, you know, I built this from scratch. And then people, you know, looked at me like I was absolutely crazy when I did this. And, you know, I think it's important to give back. I think it's important to enhance people's lives. You know, I was watching Jimmy Valvino's speech the other day. You know, it's I think the 20th anniversary, maybe it's even the 40th when he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he said he wakes up and does three things in the morning. You know, those aren't the three things I would do. But you know what? Pick three things that make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? That's really what I try to do. And that's one of the things about TSG. How do we make it a better place? How do we enhance, you know, if it's Firestone, Colorado, we give money up there. How do we do things, you know? I mean, I don't want to hear that MoDOT or that CDOT doesn't maintain something. We'll just go out and clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
Someone to do that and put art, and, you know, art invokes emotion, things like that.
Mm-hmm. That is so good. That is so good. And my brain is going nonstop here because I'm thinking about, and let me just skip to this because, you know, let's talk about giving. Because
sure.
You guys do. I mean, you guys have donated over $100 million. I know the factory's given $100,000 away a year, but you and Carol and your foundation has given away a lot of money, Michael. You've got a book called The Gift of Giving, which lays out your philosophy, right? Mm-hmm. And I think truly, I think your dad instilled that in you at a very young age, right? That you're not there for yourself. You're there to make a difference in the world. What do you hope readers take away from your book?
Well, first of all, not to correct you, we've given away a couple hundred million now.
Wow.
But more importantly, you know, the savings. When I do, I'm good at development. So a lot of these nonprofits, I'll go in and do the development, and I've saved these nonprofits $300 or $400 million. You know, they would have to go raise. And then I've raised, you know, $300 million because if I step up and they see my name on it, they say, well, we should give. You know, there was a mentor of mine by the name of Tommy Green, and he said one day, well, stop giving anonymously. Put your name on it so people can see.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what's important to me. And that's what I'm trying to get people to, you know, I call it the converging ripple theory. Mm-hmm. I'm in the art, so I built this piece of art that's 40 foot by 40 foot in Omaha on a blank wall, and it moves in the wind. It's road signs that Boris Bailey did, and he said to me, well, what do you think we should call it? I said, converging ripples. And he looked at me and said, what do you mean? I said, well, it's like a still pond. You know, you can take a little pebble and throw it in, it creates a ripple.
Mm-hmm.
Take a boulder and throw it in, it creates a ripple. It doesn't matter how big the ripple is. It's the fact that you do a ripple.
Yes.
And you make a difference. And that's all I ask. And that's what I'm, mm-hmm. I'm trying to encourage people to make a difference and help people's lives. You know, giving $1 million, I've given many times, but it's the $5,000 donation that makes a difference in someone's life or organization's life. I remember starting It's Our Region with the Regional Business Council, and we give away $100,000 a year, but no donation can be bigger than $5,000. And we pick, I don't call them orphan charities, but there was a food pantry in North St. Louis. We gave them $5,000 to buy a cooler. It added an extra 1,000 people a year. Think about that.
Amazing.
1,000 people that were benefited because of a $5,000 donation. And it's not mm-hmm. 1 year. So, mm-hmm. and I think the people who are part of that saw that, and I think it enhanced what they wanted to do. So it's not always you got to give, you know, you read about this guy giving 100 million or 200, you know, there's a lot of people. But I really believe when I give money, I want to make a difference, not just giving it, I give my time.
Yes.
And my talent to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I also am proud that, you know, there's been, you know, probably 2,000 or 3,000 pieces of art I've given away to nonprofits to make them feel better. Instead, you know, it's paint, art, lights, you know, things that people can't explain why they want to do it. And I hope that enhances what they want to do and feel like they want to do it.
Mm-hmm. Brings people joy. You know, that when you were talking about the pond, I was going to ask you this because I know that Arizona State University made you the alumnus of the year. And I can't remember which year this was, but you said everyone in this room, you had a speech, an acceptance speech, Michael. You
right.
said everyone in this room is part of a pond. That
right.
pond always needs to be moving.
Right.
Everyone can make a ripple. And I started thinking about that. And I love that metaphorically, Michael, because
yeah.
what happens when a pond does not move?
It's still and nothing happens. And
it becomes stagnant, right?
Right. It's lifeless. You know, you want
yes.
motion. You want things moving. And, you
yes.
know, and, you know, I mean, it's important. And, you know, I think about these things and I try to think about how you can continue to do that. I come up, you know, with sayings all the time and thoughts all the time. And, you know, I think it's important. You know, I just think mm-hmm. that there's certain things that encourages people. You know, I mean, the other day, this is kind of a crazy story. I'm sitting at Starbucks and the guy's yelling at the barista because his coffee's cold. So I walked up into him and said, sir, you must be having a bad day. I'm here to buy you a fresh cup of coffee. And in the counter there, buy anything you want. You want one of each thing? Go ahead. And he didn't know what to say. I said, yes, seriously, go ahead. You know, but be thoughtful of mm. people. Try to be thoughtful. And, you know, and I think he walked away a little. And I see him at Starbucks once in a while because I go to the one downtown Clayton. And he always says, thank you for making a difference in my life.
Yes.
And those are the things that didn't cost me much. I mean, I bought him a croissant and a cup of coffee. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm happy with that.
Every day we can do that. You know, you were talking about the gentleman who was saying he started his day with three things. I've got a friend that's in real estate in Denver, Jonathan or Phoenix. Jonathan Kaiser is his name. Kaiser Development, I think, is the name of his company. And he told me one time, Michael, he said, every morning I think about three people that I can make a difference in their life. It's the power of the three, right? And he said, it may not be giving them a lot, but okay, I think of three people. It's like, okay, I'm going to send that person an encouraging text or give that person a phone, you know, phone call, or maybe it is helping right. them with their rent that month or whatever the case may be. But I thought, wow, that is just, that's a really, it's a system.
Right.
But something that we can all do. And I want to reiterate to our listeners, and you've heard Michael say this, it does not have to be $100 million. It's our time. We've all been given time, talent, and treasure. And any one of those combination or any one of those or a combination of all three, we can all make a difference. And so I love that metaphor of the pond. That'll be something that I will remember. Yeah. So goodness gracious, there's so much to you. I want you to talk about downtown Chesterfield. What's downtown Chesterfield going to look like? We've had this Chesterfield Mall here for as long as we've been in St. Louis. You know, we're from Paducah, but moved here 41 years ago with McDonnell Douglas. And it's been here. But Michael, I have to tell you a really funny story. This is a funny story. So I loved that mall so much when we moved here, because you know Paducah, Kentucky. I mean, beautiful town. I love little river town. It was an awesome place to grow. But we didn't have huge malls like that, right? And I love Chesterfield Mall. And I remember being there on a weekend and with my husband, Greg, and somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, do you have today off?" They thought I worked there because I went to that mall. And Greg's like, "How often are you here, by the way?" But tell us about what's going on in downtown Chesterfield.
Well, downtown is a culmination of started in 1993 when I started Chesterfield Commons in the flood. And we built a center that's 2 miles long and about 1.8 million square feet, excluding the out parcels. And it's interesting because the mall never thought it would affect it. You know, the arrogance of the mall people, you know, we're the mall. And in fact, Tim Lowe, who's worked for me with me for 16, 17 years, used to work at the mall and redeveloped it. "Oh, they're not going to bother us. They're not going to bother us." And so, you know, eventually it started to, you know, hurt the mall.
Yes.
And then I got involved with the Taubmans because of I honored my word on something, bought that and figured, okay, I built an entertainment long before entertainment districts were there. That's why I called it the district. Entertainment, that limited, but it's called the district. And yes. And so, you know, I said to myself about 7-8 years ago, I heard the mall was going to be foreclosed on. So I said, "Tim, if you own one of the department stores, you have a seat at the table and they can't do anything. I'd rather compete with myself." So I bought the Sears store and then I bought the mall. Then I bought Macy's, but I didn't want to build a mixed use. I did not want to have a typical where you take the parking lot, you throw some apartments on, or you put some retail. And I wanted, you know, Chesterfield doesn't have a downtown.
Right.
And I said, so, you know, I live in Clayton. I like living in Clayton. You know, people don't like this, but I'm not moving to Chesterfield. I'm okay. but Chesterfield's become the third leg of the stool here. Mm-hmm. Downtown, Clayton, and Chesterfield's booming. Mm-hmm. You know, they have good restaurants, Annie Guns, you know, there's a lot of things. They have, you know, over 400 baseball teams come, 200 soccer teams. It's become a regional. And it's good for St. Louis. You know, one of the people say, "Well, you're hurting downtown in Clayton." No, I'm enhancing it. I want people to want to come to St. Louis, bring their businesses, be part of the community, because people want nice things. Forget, you know, saying downtown has safety issues. No, it's not about safety. It's about bringing people to the region.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I'm trying to do. So it's truly going to be a downtown. And, you know, right in the middle of it, I put a 3.5-acre park. Nobody does that. Nobody thinks about that stuff. And again, it's not about the money, but it is about serving the customer. And when I built the factory, I thought about who the customer is. And everybody's going to say the ticket buyers. No, that's not the customer. The customer is the artist. That's who the customer is. Because if they want to play there, the people will, you know, come. So we're fortunate because I get this every concert. "We love this place. We want to come back here." Even if they're not paying, you know, even though it might not be 5,000 seats.
Sure. Okay,
it's a little smaller. They don't make as much money, but they like the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they want the experience of downtown to be different.
Yeah.
It's exciting. So, you know, within 22 minutes of drive time, there's 1 million people that can get to the downtown. And, you know, we want people to come hang out. Enjoy it. There's going to be, you know, bike paths. There's a Y. There's a JCC. There's a library. There's an amphitheater. There's a water park. There's two lakes that you can walk around. So we're really trying to make it different than just, quote, a mixed use.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great, as you said, for our whole region, because the more people that want to come, that's good for everybody. It really is, Michael. Well, we can't wait. And I'm probably going to butcher this, so please give me grace. But, you know, there's a couple of Jewish teachings that I would love for you to explain to our listeners. And it's Zedekon. Is that right? Zedekon and Tikkun Olam?
Tikkun Olam, yes.
Is that right?
Right, yes. Okay, well, basically, to repair the world. To repair the world and to make, we're here to enhance people. It's not always about ourselves. Sure, we have to take care of ourselves, but it's about how to make, you know, the world a better place. Mm-hmm. You know, you save one life, you save the whole, everybody's lives, you know, and everybody counts. And, you know, we're not, you know, today into this world, everybody hits a button and says, oh, we talked to 10,000 people, or oh, we did this. Do one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be kind, be thoughtful.
Yeah.
That's what I try to, you know, and the biggest thing I tell everybody is, you know, and we don't do it enough, is just say thank you. I don't need anything. Just say thank you.
That's so good. That is so good. Well, I tell you, if our listeners don't take anything else away, which I know they're going to take tons of wisdom away, but repair the world. We can all do something to repair the world. And it's not about us. And what a just kind of an empty life too, right, Michael? If you get to the end of your life and you really didn't give back at all and try to repair the world and make the world a better place for other people, I think. So let me ask you this question. And we got two more questions for you, and then I want to talk about something extra. What are your non-negotiables in your daily life? Because you told me before there was a gentleman that starts his day with three things. Are there habits and practices that keep Michael Steinberg grounded?
Yeah, well, you know, I like to get up early. That's number one.
What's early?
Well, I used to get up at 4:20. You know, now I get up at 5.
Okay.
I like to wake up and I like to think about what I'm going to accomplish. Second, I do some exercise. And third, I have a list to try to organize my day so I can be efficient.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I think about now. And then I also started several years ago breathing. I like to have 10 minutes of just breathing.
Do breath work. That's awesome.
You know, I really like that. And the days I don't breathe, I'm in a hurry. I'm disappointed. And I work out 6 days a week. Everybody needs one day off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but I do that. And that way I can be more present for things and try to, you know, really. And I say to myself, what am I going to do today that's going to make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? And not, you know, I'm, you know, it's easy to be negative. Let's try to have a little positivity in there.
Amen to that. Yeah, if you want to be negative, you can find things to be negative about, but it's a choice. It's a daily choice, Michael. Daily choice to be positive. Yeah, I know you're a big cyclist. We won't talk about that, but I know that you've raised a lot of money through your cycling and that sort of thing. But what excites you the most right now about the Steinberg Group and what is on the horizon besides downtown Chesterfield and, you know, who you're going to meet today.
I get up every morning thinking how we can do better as a team, how we and us can, you know, make a difference. And, you know, just, you know, we don't have to slay the dragons. You know, this isn't about, you know, we develop things to be partners with cities and things mm-hmm. like that. How do we become better with what we do? And, you know, I, at one time at THF, I had a couple hundred people that worked for me. I didn't like myself. Today, there's 33 people. I know their names. I know their kids. I know their birthdays. I know their wives, girlfriends, or whatever. And, you know, it's nice. It's just nice to be able to walk in and walk around and sit down and, you know, say hello. You know?
It's a family.
It's a family.
We call our technology, it's our technology partners family, and we feel the same way. So, Michael, this is called Something Extra.
Okay.
What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think the something extra for every leader is to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and understand where they're coming from. If they're having a bad day, say, okay, do this. But, you know, nobody's perfect. And, you know, if you want to be a good leader, you just have to say, what can I do to make their day better? And you have to, you know, nobody can walk in your shoes. You can't walk in someone else's. But how do you really think about the other person and making sure you empower the person to be in the right seat? Just because you're good at leasing doesn't mean you're a good developer. Or if you're good at property management, you should become the head of property management. You have to understand how to put people in positions to succeed. That's really what I'm thinking about. And, you know, I wear my emotions on my sleeve. I tell people, do not take this personally. I'm very direct. And I think most leaders can't be direct. Mm-hmm. In today's world, I mean, you look at people wrong and they that's wrong. Okay, well, I didn't look at, I, you know, it's just who I am. Mm-hmm. And everybody's worried about words or this or that. And just be thoughtful. Come on, this isn't, unless someone does something egregious. Everybody's so sensitive. Let's become less sensitive.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, Michael, thank you so much. I just know that people, our listeners, are going to love hearing your story and learning from you. I love all your metaphors. I love all of your sayings. I know that they're all going to stick with me. I remember the red jacket. I'm going to remember that story, and I'm going to remember the pond. And I hope our listeners do as well. But thank you again. I know you're super busy, so I appreciate you making the time to be on the show today.
Always glad to do it. And you know, I'm as I tell everybody, I'm not perfect. I'm really not. But hopefully, somebody will take one thing away that will make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I've had a lot of great mentors that have said to me things that I've taken away. Absolutely. And you gotta want to listen. You know, a lot of people say they want to listen, but you have to want to.
Mm-hmm. Could not agree more. Well, thank you so much and have a great rest of the day, my friend.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.